It's November 22nd, 2021, and this is Markets Daily from CoinDesk. I'm Adam B. Levine here again with Adrian Bluss for your Daily News Roundup. On today's show, we're talking Bitcoin, DeFi regulation, the latest headlines, and more. And just a reminder that CoinDesk is a news source and does not provide investment advice. Bitcoin is stabilizing after a near 10% decline over the past week. The cryptocurrency has stuck above the critical level of $56,000, although resistance around $65,000 could limit further upside over the short term. The Relative Strength Index, also known as the RSI, is oversold on intraday charts, which could encourage brief buying activity. On the daily chart, the RSI is approaching oversold conditions, similar to late September, which preceded a price recovery. And on the weekly chart, Bitcoin's long-term uptrend remains intact, given the upward-sloping 40-week moving average. Momentum is still positive on a weekly basis, which is consistent with a bullish uptrend. And the monthly price chart shows no sign of upside exhaustion just yet. However, the weekly RSI is declining from overbought levels, although less extreme compared to a similar instance in January at the start of this year. This means Bitcoin is vulnerable to higher volatility as buyers take some profits. For now, Bitcoin will need to hold support and sustain a breakout above $69,000 in order to yield a new upside target towards $85,000. Some analysts conclude that reduced trading activity could be attributed to the U.S. Thanksgiving holiday taking place this Thursday and the associated break around it. Meanwhile, Ether held steady over the last 2 days, above $4,300 per ETH. And although things are better than last week, the weekend saw little evidence of any breakout from the recent market pattern, where Bitcoin appears to be establishing a new price range around the pivotal $60,000 level. Quote, "Prices will likely be contained with a slight bearish bias," the digital asset firm Equinox wrote Sunday in a newsletter. Today's crypto coverage comes courtesy of CoinDesk's markets analysts Dominic Dantes and Omkar Godbole. Bitcoin is currently trading at $58,948. That's up just over 0.1% in the last 24 hours. While Ether is trading at $4,284. That's down about 0.75% in the same time period, according to the CoinDesk Price Index. In traditional markets, U.S. stocks headed for opening gains as investors awaited data on the property market and a decision on the next Federal Reserve chairman. Futures for the S&P 500 rose just under 0.5% on Monday after the benchmark index closed out the week at its fourth highest level on record. Contracts for the Dow Jones Industrial Average and tech-focused NASDAQ 100 also edged up just under 0.5%. Meanwhile, across the pond, European stocks edged up on Monday after closing lower in the previous session as surging COVID-19 cases led several countries in the bloc to reimpose pandemic restrictions and lockdowns. Europe's Stoxx 600 share index climbed 0.2% in morning trading. The regional gauge had slipped about 0.1% over the course of last week, after rising in each of the previous 6 weeks, buoyed in part by strong corporate earnings reports helping to temper questions about high inflation. Germany's DAX index was flat, while the UK's FTSE 100 rose 0.3%. Continuing to the east, Asian stock markets were mixed. Hong Kong's Hang Seng index fell just under 0.5%, while China's CSI 300 index rose 0.5%. Japan's TOPIX gauge was broadly flat. Today's traditional markets coverage draws from the Wall Street Journal and the FT. Stay tuned for after the break. We'll be back with a few quick headlines we're tracking today with links to the full articles in the show notes for this episode as always. Then after the headlines, some unorthodox thoughts about DeFi regulation. We'll be right back.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait till you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Turning to big picture news, for most of 2021, most central bankers and economists called inflation transitory, which is, of course, a fancy way to say temporary. Their bet was that while prices would jump as the economy recovered, that pressure would soon ease. And that may still happen, but for now, inflation is accelerating. Prices paid by Americans jumped 6.2% in October from a year earlier, the most since 1990. Much will depend on the behavior of consumers and companies. If they still agree inflation will slow, they might not seek compensation via price hikes or higher pay. But if they decide the only way is up, individuals' expectations may be the ones propelling prices even further into 2022. Bloomberg has that report. And taking another perspective on inflation, Japan appears to be immune to the global inflation surge, at least so far. At a time when Americans and Europeans are wrestling with rising inflation, Japan is managing to keep consumer prices virtually flat. After decades of very low inflation, Japanese shoppers resist paying higher prices, and businesses seldom try to lift them. Companies hoard cash and stint on investment, and keep labor markets rigid so workers can't easily move to growing businesses and get pay increases. The Wall Street Journal has that report, which I think some could characterize as a success story, although not without costs. Meanwhile, the number of Americans filing new claims for unemployment benefits fell close to pre-pandemic levels last week, as the labor market recovery continues and the labor participation rate shrinks, though a shortage of workers remains an obstacle to faster job growth. The weekly unemployment claims report from the Labor Department on Thursday, the most timely official data on the economy's health, also showed jobless benefit rolls declined to a 20-month low in early November. Reuters has all the details on that one. Turning to international news, Russia's chief tax man says crypto could erode state taxation profits. The head of Russia's Federal Tax Service said the problem should be approached in a systemic way. However, he did not specify any details. CoinDesk's Anna Barikova has that one. Meanwhile, El Salvador, the only country in which Bitcoin is a legal tender, is going to build an entire city based on the largest cryptocurrency. President Nayib Bukele told a raucous crowd in a Saturday night presentation at Bitcoin Week in El Salvador. Bitcoin City, as he's calling it, will be located along the Gulf of Fonseca near a volcano. The government plans on locating a power plant by the volcano to provide energy for both the city and Bitcoin mining, the president said. According to Bukele, Bitcoin City will be a full-fledged metropolis with residential and commercial areas, restaurants, an airport, as well as a port and rail service. The city will be laid out in a circle, like a coin, and in the city center will be a plaza that will be host to a huge Bitcoin symbol. The city will have no income, property, capital gains, or payroll taxes. CoinDesk's Andreas Engler and Kevin Reynolds have that report. Turning to industry news, the Internal Revenue Service, or IRS's Criminal Investigation Unit, seized $3.5 billion worth of cryptocurrency during fiscal year 2021, which accounted for 93% of its criminal investigation seizures, according to the agency's annual criminal investigation report published on Thursday of last week. The seizures included $1 billion in crypto tied to the darknet market Silk Road. The action is the largest crypto seizure ever by the U.S. government. CoinDesk's Michael Belushi has that story. Taking a look at DAOs for a minute, a slapdash alliance of crypto fans was outbid for the U.S. Constitution in a dramatic fashion. The group, known as Constitution DAO, was outbid by an unknown buyer who submitted a $43.17 million bid at Sotheby's Auction House on Thursday evening. When the gavel finally came down, a first edition copy of the Constitution, one of only 13 in existence, was in new hands. Constitution DAO had captivated mainstream attention as perhaps the best example of the crypto community flexing its real-world buying power, but maybe they shouldn't have told people before the auction exactly how much they had raised. CoinDesk's Danny Nelson and Eli Ten have all the details on that one. And if you were looking for a reason to buy more Facebook stock, Morgan Stanley sees Facebook as the best stock to gain exposure to the metaverse. The metaverse will likely be, quote, next-generation social media, streaming, and gaming platforms, end quote, and will operate initially as an advertising and e-commerce forum, according to a research note by Morgan Stanley published last week. The, quote, addressable U.S. consumer expenditure to monetize is large at $8 trillion, $5 trillion of consumer expenditures that could be digitized faster for more immersive experiences, end quote. The metaverse has the potential to grow digital payments volume, but Morgan Stanley sees the revenue opportunity as smaller and occurring over the longer term as, quote, the challenge here is that the uncertain long-term regulatory environment around crypto creates more uncertainty about how large this monetization opportunity could be, end quote. And in lighter news, here's our associate producer, Adrian Blust.
Metaverse gaming NFTs could account for 10% of luxury market by 2030, according to Morgan Stanley. Although luxury brands don't derive a lot of revenue from digital mediums right now, this could change soon, according to a research note from Morgan Stanley published last week. Metaverse gaming and NFTs could represent a 50 billion euro revenue opportunity for the sector by 2030. Quote, NFTs and social gaming present two near-term opportunities for luxury brands, allowing them to monetize their vast IP built over decades. Dolce & Gabbana's sale of 9 NFTs for $5.7 million shows a huge potential for virtual and hybrid luxury goods, and the bank estimates that the NFT market will grow to around $300 billion by 2030. CoinDesk's Will Canny has the story.
Thanks very much for that, Adrian. Today's featured story is an opinion piece from Jesus Rodriguez, CEO of Into the Block. In recent months, the fast-growing pace of the decentralized finance or DeFi market has captured the attention of regulators looking to fit this new area of crypto into existing regulatory frameworks. Attractive yields and very unique financial instruments are regularly pushing the market to new highs, making the regulatory conversation increasingly relevant. What makes the topic of DeFi regulation so complex is the unique nature of DeFi protocols. For decades, financial regulations have evolved around the concept of establishing trusted intermediaries to enable the key building blocks of the financial system. DeFi challenges that core foundation by replacing those key financial primitives with programmable, autonomous smart contracts. A potential approach to tackle this challenge could be leveraging existing regulatory models, while also exploring new frameworks that at least consider the uniqueness of the DeFi space. But let's talk about first principles. Without pretending to have an exhaustive list about those first principles, here are a few that are worth discussing. First, applying existing models to DeFi. There's an obvious path towards applying existing regulatory frameworks to DeFi protocols. Although possible, this approach might be incredibly oversimplistic and harm the growth and existing innovation of the DeFi space. Second, creating DeFi-first regulatory frameworks. Native DeFi regulatory models might alleviate the path to regulation without constraining technological innovation. And third, quantifying value trade-offs. Imposing regulatory mechanisms in DeFi protocols can certainly hurt the space in the short term, but it's not crazy to think it will create additional value in the long term. Now let's talk about the traditional approach. The vast majority of the regulated DeFi debate centers around applying frameworks such as Know Your Customer, or KYC, and Anti-Money Laundering, or AML, to DeFi protocols. In that setting, users interacting with lending protocols such as Compound or Automated Market Makers, AMMs, like Uniswap, would have to pass KYC and AML processes before they're able to trade. This seems reasonable enough, but comes with obvious challenges. For example, Know Your Customer anti-money laundering restrictions can severely harm the growth and activity in DeFi protocols, at least in the short term. Additionally, a significant percentage of the activity in DeFi protocols is done via smart contracts. That adds multiple layers of indirection to any KYC AML model. Approaching the DeFi regulation problem by imposing KYC AML requirements on DeFi protocols is definitely viable, but also quite constraining and potentially harmful to the DeFi space. The decentralized, transparent, and programmable nature of DeFi provides a foundation for new types of regulatory frameworks. As a general principle, DeFi introduces groundbreaking innovations in the structures of financial primitives, so why shouldn't we think about regulatory models that leverage those native innovations? Even though some of these ideas might be insufficient from a regulatory coverage standpoint, their underlying principles might help to provide a better bridge between DeFi and current regulatory frameworks. An alternative approach would be to use a DeFi regulatory score. The activity in DeFi protocols is completely transparent at the blockchain level. So why not use that information to assess the regulatory compliance of a specific DeFi protocol or artifact? Let's take the example of a lending protocol like Compound. Imagine if for every Compound market, we could develop a regulatory score that quantifies every wallet based on criteria such as the number and frequency of liquidations, the wallets it interacts with, the size of the loans, and other indicators specific to the Compound protocol. A wallet that interacts with suspicious addresses will score lower than wallets that interact with addresses with a high regulatory score. Aggregating these scores for the individual wallet should give regulators a statistically significant understanding of the compliance viability of each compound market. You can extrapolate this concept to other DeFi primitives, such as automated market makers, decentralized exchanges, better known as DEXs, and many others. The idea of leveraging on-chain data to quantify the regulatory compliance of DeFi protocols is not only viable today, but could also be a more effective and certainly a more complementary mechanism than traditional KYC-AML frameworks. KYC-AML validations are validation of past compliance, but it's hard to refresh frequently. For instance, suppose a given DeFi protocol imposes know-your-customer anti-money laundering requirements. If a bad actor is able to circumvent the validation using fake data, then the actor will be able to act with certain impunity. On the other hand, systemically computing on-chain metrics relative to a bad actor's wallet can eventually result in a lower regulatory score. Also worth considering is the idea of continuously incentivized know-your-customer compliance. DeFi protocols regularly rely on incentives and governance votes to adjust the behavior of the protocol. For instance, protocols like Curve regularly assign incentives to different pools to attract liquidity. A similar concept could be applied to regulatory mechanisms like KYC-AML. Imagine that Curve or Aave decide to regularly incentivize pools or markets with a large percentage of identified wallets. It's conceivable that such a mechanism will attract more liquidity into those Curve pools while also incentivizing users to complete KYC-AML processes. Instead of enforcing the KYC-AML requirements, a regulatory framework could use DeFi incentives to organically increase the compliance of DeFi protocols. There are plenty of challenges around establishing a regulatory framework for DeFi protocols, but there's also some interesting opportunities. The most obvious one is the potential of enabling DeFi rails for a new set of regulated asset classes that are not active participants in the ecosystem. Stocks, commodities, bonds, and real estate are some of the asset classes that could be traded in DeFi protocols with the right regulatory infrastructure. DeFi today is mostly based on crypto-to-crypto instruments, but thoughtful regulation could drastically increase the value locked in DeFi protocols. In a very ambitious world, DeFi doesn't have to be an alternative financial system, but it can replace archaic financial instruments in capital markets. Overregulating DeFi in a brute force approach can certainly harm the level of innovation and growth in that sector. However, a thoughtful approach to regulation can unlock the potential of DeFi to all areas of the financial ecosystem. The trade-off is not trivial, but the only way to minimize the potential damage is to have thoughtful dialogues with regulatory bodies and open the door to experimentation. DeFi is novel and different and can open the door to more efficient and innovative forms of regulation. And that's our show for today. Thank you very much for listening. This episode was edited by Adrian Blust, and you can send us an email at podcast@coindesk.com. We'll be back tomorrow with another news roundup. And just a reminder that CoinDesk is a news source and does not provide investment advice.